Good morning. The chair calls the third meeting of the ALA Council to order. Would all councilors please occupy the reserved seats at the front of the room? At this meeting, we will again follow the same rules that were approved during the ALA Council 1 meeting. Again, as a courtesy to others, please turn your cell phones off or to silent prompting. If you need to make or take a call, please leave the council area. Thank you. Also, please watch the overhead screen for the motion description to use on your voting card. You may use only that descriptor. Your voting record is at your place. You should have a blue card for this morning's meeting. If you must leave before adjournment, please take your card to Lois Ann Gregory Wood. A quorum for a council meeting is 75 councilors. We have well over 75 councilors present, and therefore we have a quorum. Written reports should not be read, and when resolutions are presented, only the resolve clauses should be read. The agenda, Council Document 8.3, revised on January 28, 2013 at 9 p.m., and all other documents issued since the last council meeting are available at the document pickup tables in this room. I suggest that those of you who are on the agenda to report come up on the stage and sit beside Keith Michael Field shortly before your presentation. This will enable us to move through the agenda more effectively. Thank you. We have received the following resolution to add under new business. This is the resolution on divestment of holdings in fossil fuel companies, ALA Council Document Number 35. And there's a second, which is the resolution reaffirming ALA support for whistleblowers, including Bradley Manning and John Kiriakou, ALA Council Document 36. I probably mispronounced his name, but you know who I mean. Do you have any other new business to add at this time? Are there any objections to the agenda? Hearing no objections, the chair declares the agenda adopted. Council Policy 5.3 provides that memorials, tributes, and testimonials will be presented at the beginning of the last session of the ALA Council at the annual conference. But this is midwinter, right? At the conference. I will now read the names of persons recognized by memorial resolutions. Let us stand as I read the names of those being remembered today. They are Alice Holly Scott, Leo Dillon, Clara Stanton Jones, Phyllis Broadnax Heroy, Aaron Swartz, Joseph Brannan, Harris Clark McClaskey, Barbara Ann Schmidt Webb, Genevieve K. Bishop, and William, and we all knew him as Bill DeJohn. Thank you. Please be seated. We have received one tribute resolution to announce today, and this is for the Association for Library Services to Children on the occasion of the 75th anniversary of the Caldecott Medal. Copies of the memorials, tributes, and testimonials are available at the council documents pickup tables in this room. Yeah. Microphone 5.
Yeah. Councillor Large, I'm rather distressed that we don't have a resolution honoring the memory of Russell Schenck. And I would also like to know if that memory book for Russell's family is still being circulated.
We'll take note and follow up. I now call your attention to ALA Council Document 11.2 and ask Councillor Henry Stewart, Chair of the Tellers Committee, to present the ALA Executive Board election results.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd like to thank all the candidates who stood for election. I think that was wonderful. I'd also like to specifically thank Councillor Eileen Bush and Councillor Betsy Fraser for serving as tellers. The Tellers Committee met last evening at 7:30. 130 ballots were requested. 130 ballots were returned. Zero ballots were void. The following two candidates were elected to three-year terms on the ALA Executive Board: Sarah Kelly Johns and James Jim G. Neal. The two elected... Okay. The two elected executive board members' terms will begin at the close of the 2013 ALA Annual in Chicago and extend to the end of the 2016 Annual Conference in Orlando, Florida. Thank you.
Thank you. Will the newly elected executive board members please stand so that we again can recognize and congratulate you. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document Number 19 and call upon Pat Scales, Chair of the Intellectual Freedom Committee, to report.
Thank you. Well, you will be pleased that this will be short and sweet and that we have no resolutions to bring to you at this time. You have the report in front of you. The only thing I want to really call your attention to is item number one on the IFC report, which is the resolution on homelessness and libraries council document number 45 that was sent to the IFC committee after, by this body after the annual conference. It was sent to us because of the concern of the resolved clause that called for a revision of the Library Bill of Rights. So the IFC examined this resolution closely, and we reviewed the Library Bill of Rights, and we determined that the housing status that is covered under the scope of background under Article 1 of the Library Bill of Rights. Therefore, we do not want, it is not our desire to change the Library Bill of Rights. We prefer for it to stay as broad as it is. But we will assure you that as we're preparing to revise the ninth edition of the Intellectual Freedom Manual, we are examining all of the interpretations to the Library Bill of Rights. And we have made those, we have made assignments, people are working on that now, and we will make sure that it's perfectly clear in the interpretation of the Library Bill of Rights that housing status is you're covered. I mean, we feel it's covered, but we want people to understand that are using these interpretations that it does include that. So we will make sure of that in the interpretations, but we're very hesitant to change the Library Bill of Rights. We do want to thank CERT for bringing this to our attention, but and we will take care of that at a later time. The only other item I really want to call your attention to that's in, it's in your report, but just I will just say a few words about it, is the newsletter on intellectual freedom. We are changing that. We have had a task force working on that. We are continuing to work through the spring, and we are. It is our desire to make this a broader publication. It's going to be online. It's online now, and our thoughts are that we want to make it refereed articles, both research-based and some practical, and we will make sure that it covers all types of libraries when we do these articles. So we're in the process of appointing an advisory board and ultimately an editorial board to make this a really vibrant publication that all types of libraries can use. And so are there any questions? That's what we have for you today.
Are there any questions for Pat? Thank you, Pat.
Thank you. I could have made my plane this morning. Now I'm going red-eye because I didn't think I could. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I now refer you to Council Document Number 20 through 20.2 and call upon ALA Councilor Vivian Nguyen, Chair of the Committee on Legislation, to report.
Good morning, everyone. As Maureen has said, you have the report. It's CD 20. The Committee on Legislation brings you two action items in that report. One is a resolution, the other is a tribute. The The first resolution is addressing the copyright's first sale doctrine and the importance of it for libraries to lend materials no matter where they are manufactured. And that is, 20.1. Resolution supporting the application of the first sale doctrine of the copyright law to all materials in library collections. I'll read the resolves. Be it resolved that the American Library Association reaffirm the essential role of the first sale doctrine in ensuring that the education, research, and library communities continue to support the constitutional purpose of the copyright law by promoting the advancement and sharing of knowledge, innovation, and creativity wherever made. And two, urge the United States Congress to pass legislation to remedy any judicial decision that limits libraries' ability to lend copies of foreign-made works under the first sale doctrine. And this resolution has been endorsed by the Office for Information Technology Policy Advisory Committee.
Is there discussion? Microphone 5.
Bob Holly, IFRT Councilor. I'm in strong support of this. I'd like to point out that there could be other things that would be made difficult for libraries, because the out-of-print book market would disappear perhaps under this ruling, and so it would be more difficult for libraries to acquire materials if the first sale doctrine is disallowed under a court decision.
Thank you. Microphone 3.
Zora Sampson, Counselor at Large. And to me, this is a bigger deal because I already have donors, not about sales, but people that want to donate things, that are frightened by this. And I'm an academic librarian, and it's been a great tradition that faculty would donate their collections upon retirement to many of our academic libraries. And many of them worry that, oh, can I not give you this book if it was published somewhere else? Or it doesn't matter that that's not exactly what's going on here. It's still that when people feel they can't be generous to libraries, we'll never know the impact of this kind of stuff. So that's an important thing to me. I have enough donors already upset that they can't donate their ebook collections. But this is a very important thing beyond just the face of it. Thank you.
Thank you.
If I could speak to that, I think that's a good point. Text of the resolution is giving more detail, but it is true that this an adverse decision could affect things such as book sales and other places such as Goodwill that deal with secondhand books and so forth. Very, very wide-reaching implications.
Are you ready for the vote? All those in favor, raise one hand. Thank you. All those opposed, raise one hand. The motion passes.
Thank you.
And mark your ballot, Council Document 20.1.
The second action item is a tribute to Olympia Snow. Resolution honoring Senator Olympia J. Snow for her support of America's libraries, January 2013. Be it resolved that the American Library Association extends its deepest appreciation to Senator Olympia J. Snow for her extraordinary service and record of achievement, and thanks her for years of dedicated commitment to libraries and the public, American public that depends upon them.
Microphone 5.
Yes, I just want to add that Senator Snow, as a congresswoman, was the...
Councilor Steno, please identify yourself.
Sorry, Rocco Steno, New York chapter counselor. Senator Snow was the co-sponsor, along with Senator Moynihan, of the School Library Media Month, and which is still celebrated 25 years later, and I think that also should be a whereas.
Thank you. Anything else? Are you ready for the vote? All those in favor of extending appreciation, raise one hand. Thank you. Those opposed, raise one hand. The motion passes. Council has voted to extend appreciation to Senator Snow. Council document 20.2 is the way to mark your ballot.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Vivian. I now direct your attention to ALA Council document numbers 18 through 18.2 and call upon Nancy Bolt, Chair of the International Relations Committee, to present the report. Nancy?
Thank you very much for giving us this time. You have the written report in front of you. I do want to highlight a few things that are in it, and then I have two resolutions to bring to you from IRC. First of all, we continued at this conference our support of our international members, and we had about 125 with us, including, we're pleased to say, IFLA President Ingrid Parent, who is the librarian at the University of British Columbia. So it's always nice to have her come. We continue to work on the international strategic plan, which mirrors the ALA 15 strategic plan. One of the most exciting things we're looking at is trying to capture the international programs that are offered either on their own or in conjunction with other university units that focus on international relations, international training, that sort of thing. So we're going to be looking at publishing something like that. Again, ALA had a very large delegation to Helsinki, to IFLA in Helsinki. We had over 300 librarians who went. This shows the real tremendous impact, I think, that ALA and its values and U.S. Values can have in shaping some of the international programs. And along those lines, we have been dealing with IFLA nominations this year. We have a whole slew of them to recommend to the ALA Executive Board this afternoon. Actually, I guess we did it yesterday. So that has been done. We continue to participate in international book fairs, and this was the 15th year of the Guadalajara Book Fair, and we had over 100 ALA members. We're in the process of figuring out what that impact is on American book collections to serve people who speak other languages besides English. We also have continued our International Library Relief Program, and this year we were able to help rebuild libraries in Haiti, Japan, and Chile with donations of over $60,000 just for the libraries in Haiti. So we're very proud of our American librarians for donating in support of these reconstructions. I want to point out that there is a new international publication called International AL Direct. It's published by the International Relations Office, and we urge you to read it. You can just go to the international website and read it on your own, or if you would like to be notified when it arrives, there's a place there where you can register to get an automatic notification. We heard a report from Nancy Gwynn on the U.S. Committee of the Blue Shield, and they're doing really great work, and I just want to point out that one of the things we talked to them about was the destruction of libraries and manuscripts in Timbuktu, Mali. That came as a real shock to all of us, I know, yesterday. We talked about it at the committee and are not recommending any action at this time, primarily because it's so new, we really don't know for sure all that happened. The news media reported destruction of ancient manuscripts. Some said 3,000, some said 20,000. So it's unclear exactly how much damage was done. Not that any damage isn't a horrible thing to have to experience, but we're not sure yet of the extent. And the news media also reported that some manuscripts had been removed from the libraries for safekeeping, and we don't know when or how many or where or if they're still safe. So we are monitoring this along with the U.S. Committee of the Blue Shield and the International Committee of the Blue Shield. As soon as we know something, we will report back to you, and if it's appropriate to have a resolution at the next ALA conference, we will bring you one.
Let me ask if there's discussion of the report.
Yes. before I get to the resolution?
Yes.
Okay.
Is there any discussion of the report? I think you can proceed.
Okay, great. Thank you. We bring you two resolutions. The first one is 18.1, resolution on supporting WIPO treaty for improved access for people who are blind, visually impaired, and with other print disabilities. I won't go into a lot of detail. We talked about it at great length at the council forum a couple of nights ago. Just to let you know that the Library Copyright Alliance, LCA, has been very active in working with the Barack Obama administration, with WIPO, with their Standing Committee on Copyright and Related Rights, to get this treaty written and ready to be voted on that will provide a copyright exception for people who have print handicaps or print disabilities. So with that, I would like to move on behalf of IRC, Council Document 18.1, and the whereas is, resolve that American Library Association endorses the Obama administration's statement that access to information is a universal right, commends the United States delegation to World Intellectual Property Organization, WIPO, for their recognition of libraries as critical providers of accessible content, and supports the call for a diplomatic conference to enact the WIPO International Instrument Treaty on Limitations and Exceptions for Visually Impaired Persons and Persons with Disabilities. I know that we have endorsements from IRC, of course, also the Committee on Legislation, ASCLA, IRRT, PLA, and the ALA Committee on Diversity, and there may be others that I missed.
Is there discussion of the motion? Microphone 4.
Mario Gonzalez, Councillor at Large. I want to speak on the report. I got to the microphone and no one looked up that I was here. I prefer not to wait until annual for a resolution on Timbuktu Mali destruction of materials. So if there's a way, Nancy, to make this happen as soon as we know what the details are, I'd like this body to take action on that through a resolution before annual.
We can prepare one from the committee, have the committee approve it by mail, and then whatever council procedure has for approving resolutions between conferences, I assume will apply.
Thank you. Microphone 4.
Christine Lynn Hague, PLA Councillor. I rise in support of this resolution for the WIPO document. This is essential to people with visual disabilities, in particular around the world. And it also has been discussed, and Carrie Russell of the OITP office serves on the WIPO, in the WIPO organization. So I urge everyone to support this resolution.
Thank you. Microphone 6.
Mike Marlin, Councillor at Large, and had a hand in writing this resolution. Just want to urge everyone to please vote for this. This is an essential document, this is a critical time in the history of the world blind community and world community of people with print disabilities for myriad reasons. We finally have some momentum moving forward after many, many years of activity. So there will be a conference coming up in a few months, and whether or not this will gain enough steam to pass through past all the WIPO member nations who are resistant, I don't know. I'm hopeful, though, and I'm very proud and excited that the United States delegation has endorsed this so easily this time around. I also want to briefly mention that in the Social Responsibilities Roundtable meeting, this was endorsed in principle as well.
Thank you. Microphone 3.
Liz Bischoff, ASCLA Councillor. I want to take the opportunity on behalf of ASCLA to thank the Office of Information Technology Policy, the IRC, certainly Mike, for all the work on this resolution, and ASCLA has strongly endorsed the resolution. Thank you.
Thank you. this time I'm looking up. Microphone four.
Thank you, Madam President. I strongly support this amendment. I think that it's kind of sad that at this point we have to have special wording for people that have special needs. So I strongly support this. As having been the coordinator of services to people with disabilities for the New York Public Library, this is something that should obviously be endorsed.
Thank you. Microphone six.
Jane Glasby, Counselor at Large. As a librarian in a library for the blind and print disabled, this is really important to me because I have, for example, a large Chinese-speaking community of Mandarin and Cantonese in particular and other languages, and I cannot serve that community. We can't get the materials, so this will be really helpful to us. And the other thing is that now, at the moment, that across the world, most other countries are getting our second and third hand Braille, and it would be great if they could have their own. So, thank you.
Thank you. Microphone six.
Daniel Verdaner, International Relations Roundtable. I just wanted to say that the IRT does endorse this resolution.
Thank you. If there's no further discussion, we'll proceed to the vote. All those in favor, raise one hand. Thank you. Those opposed, raise one hand. The motion passes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Have a second resolution.
One quick thing. Sorry. Mark your ballot, Council Document 18.1. Back to you.
Thank you. I have a second resolution to bring to you, the resolution on United States funding and participation in UNESCO. I'll just say by introduction that ALA is a member organization of the U.S. National Commission for UNESCO. Barbara Ford represents us there. And until recently, U.S. has been a full dues-paying member of UNESCO, but Congress stopped funding UNESCO in late 2011 after UNESCO admitted Palestine into full membership. There were some laws passed in the 1990s by Congress that said that the U.S. would cut off funds to any United Nations agencies that accepted Palestine as a full member. Countries that stop paying their dues have a two-year grace period, and ours is almost up. It's important that the United States and the values on access to information and the rights of citizens to participate in their government, all those sorts of things be continued, and that not that we're the only country that supports those, but we're a major country that supports those kinds of values. And so it turns out, something called a national interest waiver that Congress can pass, which would basically set aside the laws and allow the U.S. to continue to pay its dues to UNESCO. So on behalf of the IRC, I move Council Document 18.2. which says, resolve that the American Library Association urges Congress to approve the national interest waiver so that the United States can again pay its dues and become a fully functioning member of the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. I will say that this is supported by COL, IRC, of course, IRRT. It was sent to the Society of American Archivists by one of our members who discussed it and are very excited about supporting it but weren't able to have a vote and actually asked if their name could be added later. And then the National Education Association, citing UNESCO's support of women's education and training.
Thank you. Is there discussion on the motion? I think we can proceed to the vote. All of those in favor, raise one of your hands. Thank you. Those opposed, raise one of your hands. Thank you. The motion passes. Mark your ballot, Council Document 18.2.
The chair and the committee would just like to thank the staff and the International Relations Office for the great job they do in supporting not just the committee and ALA, but all of our international members around the world. Thank you.
Thank you. I would now like to present for your consideration ALA Council Document 14.1, which is the ALA Executive Board's proposed revision of the language and the review process for personal member dues adjustment. If adopted, this language will be placed on the 2013 ALA spring ballot for ratification by the membership. I also want to just call to your attention that after your motion yesterday, the Executive Board did work on Option B, and you now have that in front of you for your consideration. Is there discussion? Oh, and I should read it. So the proposed language for the ballot, resolved, beginning in September 2013 and continuing annually through September 2017, personal member dues will be reviewed by the ALA Executive Board, which may approve a dues adjustment not to exceed the percentage change in the National Average Consumer Price Index, or CPI, for the previous calendar year, rounded to the nearest dollar. Any increase beyond the above provision proposed by the Executive Board will require approval by a vote of council and a mail vote of ALA personal members. This provision shall be formally evaluated by the Executive Board and council in 2016 with input from ALA personal members. Any subsequent dues adjustment will require approval by a vote of the ALA Executive Board, Council, and a mail vote of ALA personal members. Microphone 6.
John Sandstrom, Member at Large. I stand in support of this proposal, and as I said last night at forum, I would like to thank the Executive Board for the work they did in refining the dues proposal from membership. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone 5.
Thank you, Maggie Farrell, ACRL counselor. We discussed this yesterday in the ACRL board, and even though we were fully in support of the original proposal, we, as a board, also support this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone 5.
Hattie Dudley, Arkansas chapter counselor, my first time to the microphone. So I made a few notes.
Welcome.
The first note is my name and where I'm from, in case I forgot when I got up here. I do want to commend the membership committee, the executive board, and the council for their due diligence in doing the right thing for the membership dues. I support this proposal. I think the specific verbiage really allows for accountability and transparency. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone 6.
Al Kagan, CERT counselor. I'd like to inform the council that the Social Responsibilities Roundtable has thoroughly discussed this and passed dues proposals. We have two objections to it. First of all, we think that members should always be able to vote on any dues increase at any time it is proposed. I also noted last night that since we do an electronic ballot, there is almost no added extra expense to do that. Second objection is that during this time when many people still think it's a recession, I certainly do, we are opposed to raising dues, especially for our lowest paid members. Maybe most of the people in this room can afford it, but there are a lot of people who are not even members of ALA because they make low salaries and don't see how they should spend that amount of money for the benefit that they might get. So we would like to see ALA raise revenue by getting more members. There are lots of members out there who are not, there are lots of librarians out there who are not members because the dues are too high. Therefore, we reiterate our support for a progressive dues structure based on salary so that we would actually be able to get more revenue and more members from people who are not now members of ALA. The objections that I hear to that are often that it's not the same to make $40,000 in Kansas as in New York. But it's also true that those current inequities are currently in the dues structure, and the divide is often more urban versus rural, where people in urban areas might have more similar salaries to each other in different states than the lowest paid members in rural areas. So I hope that at some point this body will see fit to revisit that question of the whole principle behind the current dues structure. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone five.
Sarah Kelly Johns, AASL Division Counselor. The AASL Executive Board met yesterday afternoon and discussed this, and as per the consensus of the board earlier in the conference, they feel that this was exactly what the AASL Executive Board was hoping would come. So AASL will be voting in favor of this. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone five.
Nick Buron, Counselor at Large. I want to thank the work that was done in the time between sessions. I do think that the CPI is a flawed index to use, and I do think that in this time period, I do not see the executive board wanting to raise dues more than the CPI and bring it to the membership in the next 4 years. So my concern is that we actually are not going to raise enough money for what we want to do, and that we're sort of spinning a little bit for the next few years without infusing a little bit of needed cash right now and then going to a CPI. But I do stand in support of this. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone five.
Jim Kuhn, Counselor at Large. Thank you for the work that has gone into this revised proposal. I have one question of clarification. Looking at the FAQ, or the questions that were added to the previous document that was revised on 111.13, under question seven, it indicates that reduced rates for individuals who are unemployed or whose income is $25,000 or less, if the new dues proposal is approved, this discounted rate will be available to individuals whose income is $30,000 or less. In a difficult economy, this dues category helps those in career transition or those just beginning their careers. Does this still hold?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, it does.
And thank you for that clarification. I appreciate the executive board's and staff's attention to the issue of accommodating those whose incomes are low. Income diversity among the membership is an important form of getting, not just increased membership, but also increased voices among us. I'd just like to point out, as we're talking about external indices that we might track dues to, that there are, in fact, living wage calculators that track state by state what a living wage is. And speaking as someone who works in the District of Columbia, the $25,000 or less reduced rate, that speaking for people whose income is $25,000 or less, that could have been doubled and you still wouldn't have reached a living wage for an adult with a single parent with a child in the District of Columbia. So I want to thank the board for its work to improve on the progressive dues structure that we in fact do have, such as it is, but urge you, as you're looking at external indices in the coming years, and I'd love to see some data, I guess is one question that I would pose. How many members who are now qualifying for reduced rates, how many do we lose as a result of this indexing? And when this does come back in 2016, I hope we can consider again the question of living wage indexes and how we might use them as an association to increase the ranks of membership among those whose income is low. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Tom Wilding. Excuse me. Tom Wilding, Counselor at Large, with a voice this time. I also want to thank the board for its diligence in being responsive. I think this is a really great. I think what you have written is better than what was being proposed yesterday, and I'm very glad that we ended up deferring this to today's agenda, so that we can have a really good easily supported resolution. However, you knew that was coming. I will point out, for not the first time, that there are those of us who will not be affected by this because we don't pay dues. Those of us who retired, including those of us who then unretired, still are riding on a zero personal dues. And I really feel that that should be looked at. Many retired people, I would even say most of us when we retire, are not going to have our incomes go down enough that we can't afford to continue to pay personal membership dues to our professional association that has supported us and allowed us to have a career for more than 25 years. And that's very little to ask of us. So I really think that the board should ask the membership committee to re-examine that in the light of today's retirement situations and consider reinstating some dues structure for retired members.
Keith would like to comment.
Tom, thank you for your comment that has that issue is one that we have discussed. Two things that I would respectfully suggest. We now have a new retired members roundtable, and by becoming a member of that roundtable, you will be contributing to the association. Second of all, The discussion has been raised that, in fact, for instance, I know all of you are aware of our 15 by 15 campaign. What we see as the method by which what you've described can occur is for ALA members, many ALA members upon retirement are in a position to be able to contribute to things that they care about. We have wills at the back of the room that you can sign. So again, please consider a planned gift, and we are doing such things as annual Spectrum fundraising drives. So please feel free to give early and often. Thank you.
And it seems I should recognize you again. Microphone four, brief comment.
A brief comment. I am a charter member of the Retired Members Roundtable, and I have been contributing to the APA ever since I retired my personal dues amount so that the association is getting something. It's just it's going to the APA. And I'll continue to do that, and I would encourage other people to do that if they can. But I also would encourage people to consider doing both paying a dues and contributing through the 15 by 15 program.
I thank you. Microphone three. Oh, excuse me?
Point of privilege?
Sure.
Elizabeth Riddler, Councilor at Large. It should be remarked you have to have been a member for a number of years. I forget whether it's 25. I'm retired, and I'm still paying retirement reduced dues. I still have, I think, 5 years to run before I get that freebie, so not all of us are free.
Thank you for the clarification. Microphone three.
Kathy Parsons, the Iowa chapter representative. While I appreciate all the changes that have been made since yesterday to this document, I have to inform you that I have been instructed by the Iowa Library Association to vote no on this proposal.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Wanda Dole, Library Research Roundtable Counselor. LRRT discussed this yesterday, and we are in full support.
Thank you. Microphone seven.
Brian Schottlander, Elects Division Counselor. I am happy to report that the Elects Board met yesterday afternoon, and with benefit of input from Council's earlier discussion of yesterday, we have reaffirmed our support for this proposal in its revised form, for which we thank the Executive Board. And I'll just say in closing that I hadn't realized until Keith's comments of a few minutes ago just what was meant by where there is a will, there is a way.
Thank you. Microphone five.
Paula Brumhager, Counselor at Large. I certainly appreciate the work
of the executive board on this and echo that thanks. I will vote for it because I think it is a reasonable resolution, and I do feel that we need the membership to increase. That said, I would like to point out again that I feel the review process, while palatable, is a bit of a redundancy in the governing structure we have here. As was pointed out on the floor of council yesterday, there exist provisions in what we do and how our membership can interact with what we pass and things like membership do. There exist provisions for them to come forward and change something that they do not like. I think putting in a review process means that we're going to have to talk about this again and again, which is good, but I think unnecessary. I think we're unduly burdening people in the future with something that, as demonstrated by the folks who came to council forum last night, we know the people we elect to executive board are very responsive. Evidence suggests that they will listen to us. Evidence does not suggest that they are crazy overlords who are going to put some kind of crazy membership due in structure in place. So I'm not sure that we really need to build in all these redundancies at a time when we know new members and a lot of our members complain that we're not nimble enough. This is the kind of thing that makes us less nimble, I think. I also was pleased to see representatives from the membership committee talk about membership retention, which I think is really what we talk about endlessly here and at council forum, which is really important, and we should talk about that. And as someone pointed out earlier, look at data about membership retention instead of speculation about what people may do on membership due changes. We will see what they will do. Membership market will, the market will bear what it will bear, and we can see if people like it or don't like it by whether or not they continue to join ALA. So again, I think it's a solid resolution. I certainly will support it, but I would ask everyone to consider, you know, whether or not the redundancies are necessary. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone five.
Walter Betts, Texas, I can speak English, I can. Texas chapter counselor. I'm proud to state that the executive board of the Texas Library Association supports this very common sense proposal.
Thank you. Microphone six.
Jane Glasby, counselor at large. I'd like to recognize the hard work done on this dues proposal, and in previous dues proposal, I'd like to congratulate whoever was responsible for introducing a progressive dues structure for institutions, for libraries by library size, and also the fact that we have special rates for people who are retired, who are unemployed, and for people under a certain income. But my question is, what are the people who make $31,000 going to be doing? And I am unable to support a due structure that is not progressive, and I also am, I can't vote for something that's not asking the membership to vote on this. I think it's an essential democratic process. And the other thing is that when people say there are structures that people can bring, the members can bring to the they can go to the membership meeting. Well, we know that the membership meetings are only attended by councillors, basically, and that those membership meetings, which used to be a very strong democratic body, have been languishing, and I don't think that the members know about it. And also, I think that we're talking about speculation, and I would like to know data. I agree with that. But I know, anecdotally, we all know so many people who don't belong to ALA because it's too expensive for what they, for the return that they see. So I'd like to see us having a much larger membership of people who are lower paid, and that we can only do that by having a progressive dues structure. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone two.
Mary Biblow, counselor at large. I wish to say that I commend the work that the committee did, and that finally they recognize the value and the worth of membership, and that we will try to adhere to the Constitution that was passed over 100 years ago. And I think it was due to the prodding of the membership, or the people recognizing the importance of the membership, that we made such a progress as this. Therefore, I'm not happy with the dues in structure, because I believe in a structure based on the the salary, where people who are making $35,000 a year are riding on the backs of those who are making $20,000 a year. But I do see that council and the membership is finally recognized. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone 3.
Jim Neal, ALA Treasurer. The question was raised at last night's council forum, what the cost would be to run an ALA election. That information was not available last evening, but I can confirm that based on our experience running the elections, the approximate cost for each election is $130,000.
Thank you. Seeing no further discussion, we'll proceed to the vote. Will all those in... Thank you. Microphone 3.
Sorry, last minute. Okay. Valerie Feynman, representing Small Round Tables. The Retired Members Round Table hasn't taken an official vote about this, but most of us do think that it's a very strong and well-done message, and we will vote for it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Let's proceed to the vote. Those in favor, please raise one of your hands. Those opposed, please raise one of, thank you. Those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion passes. Mark your ballot, Council Document 14.1. And just for a moment, I'd like to step out of my role as the presiding officer and step into my role as the president and ask you, now that you have passed this, and it is going to the membership for a vote, that you do everything you can to support this. We could see from the discussion yesterday and also from all of the good work of the membership committee how important having a process like this is going to be. To help you, those of you who would like to use this, the staff within as short a time frame as they can will prepare an information sheet or some written communication that you might use as you engage in conversations with others. I also want to encourage you to continue to put forth any questions or issues that you may see, and I invite that particularly because this is an important measure. And the last thing that I want to say is how effectively not only you as the body council worked, but moving that motion to the executive board gave the executive board yesterday an opportunity to really dig in and work effectively with staff. And I have to say there were a couple of councilors who were helping as well. From my perspective as the president, as although this was complex and difficult yesterday, and I ran away not because I was running from the issue, but because I had something else to do, coming back to it and learning how you had completed that work and the opportunity that you gave to the executive board really puts all of us in a position to feel proud of how we work to represent the best interests of members. And even in this discussion, there were thoughts about how important it is for us to keep looking at ways to increase our membership. That is the way this association will continue to be relevant and as effective as possible. So I thank you for passing this motion, but also the good work you have done here and the good work that you will do to keep the membership informed so that when they're dealing with this resolution on the ballot this spring, people are making informed decisions about their choice that they will have to act on that ballot. So thank you. Microphone. Thank you. I'm stepping back into my role as the presiding officer to recognize microphone 4.
Tom Wilding, Councillor at Large. And Maureen, nobody would ever suspect you of just running out at that opportune moment, I'm sure. I'm sure Barbara didn't have any such suspicions.
Thank you.
I was just going to suggest that you encourage chapter leaders to communicate the importance of this to their members. I think we've got a good network, and I think if you can get the support of the chapter leaders, you'll see this fly through.
Okay, thank you. Let me recognize Keith Fields.
As Maureen indicated, we're going to try and get something out very quickly. I think we'll try and get a one-pager out on Thursday. The Q&A will also need to be updated a little bit, and that may take an extra day or so, but we'll get these materials out to you as quickly as possible to assist in communicating out on this.
Thank you. We'll now take up new business. Would ALA Councilor Ben Trapskin please go to the microphone and read only the resolved clause of ALA Council document number 35. This is the resolution on divestment of holdings in fossil fuel companies. I recognize microphone 3.
Ben Trapskin, Minnesota Chapter Councilor. Be it resolved that the American Library Association goes on record to publicly recognize that human generation of CO2 is resulting in global climate change and directs its endowments trustees to divest all holdings in the fossil fuel industry and invest in renewable energy initiatives, renews relations with the book industry, Environmental Council, the Green Press Initiative, and other partners in the publishing and information technology industries to explore how we can help our communities and nation transition away from a fossil fueled economy. Calls on President Obama to hold a White House conference on climate change, which libraries will assist in launching with a series of library-based local, state, regional, national, and international community conversations focused on planning and implementing a peaceful transition to a post-fossil fuel, sustainable human relationship with the planet, and amend ALA policy B5.5 to state that libraries are urged, in addition to the collection and provision of information regarding the environment, to take steps in assisting communities transition to fossil-free, renewable, sustainable energy resources.
Thank you. Would the mover like to speak to the resolution?
Yes, please. This resolution isn't so much to have an economic impact on the fossil fuel industry, but more so to make a point that ALA is moving towards initiatives that are sustainable and to stigmatize these industries that are contributing to climate change. And if I may have the permission of council to have ALA member Elaine Harger speak towards this resolution.
Yes, thank you, Council Member Kagan. After all councilors have spoken, we will invite her.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Microphone 6. Oh, 3, sorry.
Irene Briggs, Councilor at Large and Chairperson of the Resolution Committee. For information purposes, this resolution was sent to BARC, but I don't believe they had an opportunity to look at it carefully.
Thank you. Microphone 6.
Al Kagan, Sir Councilor. I'd like to remind the body that divestment is not something new for ALA. And if you look at the second whereas, you'll see that we actually were on record and hopefully actually implemented divestment of stocks and corporations doing business in South Africa from 1985 until 1994. So this is not a new thing for us to do. And I think this is the issue of our times. It's really important for us to move on climate change. So far, very little has been done in this country, especially as opposed to some other countries. And I just want to recommend that you listen to former Councillor Elaine Harger, who was really the person who really put this together. And I'm hoping that we don't have, let me just say, I hope she gets to speak sooner than later.
Thank you. Microphone 3. Oh, thank you. Microphone 2.
I'd like to know if this is...
Oh, please identify yourself.
Larry Romans, Councilor at Large. I'd like to know if this has financial implications. My understanding was that it got sent to BARC before we started talking about the resolution. Am I incorrect about that?
That's the usual practice as I understand it. Is the BARC chair present? She is, and she's coming to a microphone. If you microphone three, BARC chair Clara Borer.
Thank you. This did not come to us yet.
Thank you.
Refer it to you just to make sure. I filled out the form and
it will. So I'm back, right?
Not been received. She was just saying that she did put on the motion that she referred it to us, but we did not receive it.
Well, okay. It said refer, not referred, so that's why I put down BARC, and I there's a difference between is going to be refer. Might have been my own misunderstanding the form. Okay. Can I speak?
Just before you do, I note that are you standing in line to also comment as part of the discussion, Councillor Romans?
I'm a seconder. Is that a different?
I'm just trying to understand if Councillor Romans is finished with his point of order.
Oh, okay.
Well, I haven't heard the response. Is this discussion in order or not?
So I'm advised by our parliamentarian that technically this is not consistent with our policy.
Then I move that it be sent to BARC officially.
Is there a second?
Yeah.
Second. Is there discussion? No. Is there discussion on referral to BARC? And those of you who have comments in the discussion on referral to BARC, if you would stay at the microphone, if others would move away from the microphone, it'll be easier for me to manage. Microphone two.
I'd like to remind councillors that the Resolutions Committee asked you to turn in your resolutions a month before the conference. Fossil fuels did not just happen yesterday. This is a question that if it had been ready at the beginning of the conference, it could have gone to BARC. There wouldn't have been any problem. So if it doesn't get brought up today, it's the responsibility of the people who moved and seconded it.
Is there other discussion on the motion to refer to BARC? Microphone six is next.
Yeah. Al Kagan, third counselor. I think this is probably going to happen. So what I would like to propose before we finish this item is for Elaine Harger to address us, because I don't believe that Elaine is going to be present at the next meeting to be able to do it at that time.
The motion before us is to refer this to BARC. And it's on that motion that we need to continue to hear discussion. Who's next?
I think Mario.
Are you going to speak, Mario, to this? So microphone four.
Mario, excuse me. Mario Gonzalez, Councilor at Large. I think that many of us stood up here at the same time to make the motion that we're discussing to refer this to BARC. However, this resolution has 5 points. Not all points have fiscal implications. Point number two definitely has a fiscal implication. I don't know if the movers would consider breaking up the resolution numbers separately so that we can vote on that. I am in favor of having some of these resolutions be brought forward, not having to go to BARC, because they do not have a fiscal implication. So I don't know how to go about doing this. Definitely number two should be referred to BARC, in my opinion, but some of the other numbers under resolution do not.
Point of order.
Microphone three. And identify yourself, please.
Larry Romans, Counselor at Large. In the ALA Policy Manual 5.2, a council motion which has fiscal implications must be submitted to the Executive Director and BARC 24 hours before it is to be voted on. So this doesn't even need a motion. It is not in order.
I'm advised that the motion is in front of us. Is there other discussion on this motion?
No.
Microphone two.
Sorry, that it's out of order according to our policy manual.
Give me a moment to confer with the parliamentarian.
Madam President.
Yes. The chair recognizes microphone three.
Not only is this out of order because it hasn't been sent to BARC, it's also out of order because it wasn't submitted 24 hours before this session.
So as chair, the point of order is well taken, and I note that the motion to refer is not needed. And therefore, I ask your indulgence to listen to Elaine Harger. And then we'll proceed to the next resolution. Do you understand? So, is there any objection? A point of information first.
I apologize for adding yet another element to this, but I am also confused as to how the document from yesterday, 6.1 to 6.3, which is point number four, that discusses the need to have a paragraph associated with any resolution that describes how it relates to ALA strategic plan is also lacking here. So I may be misunderstanding what this document refers to, so I just needed some information because I don't think this resolution has this associated element either, which further concerns me.
So therefore, the motion to refer is not in order. And what was the second? And the resolution itself is not in order. So I'm asking for your consent at this point. We don't need to go further because it's not in order to let Elaine speak briefly. No. And let's take a vote just to be clear. It is. Microphone two.
Pam Klipsch, Missouri Chapter Counselor. Elaine was the person who originated this idea. She is not a member of council. She is a member of our association. She will not be able to attend in Chicago if they choose to bring this back in Chicago in a more timely manner. So it is a courtesy to a member of this association and a former member of this council to allow her to speak now, since she will not be able to speak in Chicago.
And given this, I ask your permission to allow this, and we will give her 2 minutes to do this. Are there objections? Thank you. Elaine, if you would, microphone seven.
Aaron Dobbs, Counselor at Large. The reason I got my gears together to run for council is I was invited by a member of council to speak and the entire place shut me down. So I am going to, if we actually are going to do a formal vote, we'll be voting to let Elaine speak. Thank you.
Thank you. I actually have invited Elaine to speak, and I'm looking for her. There she is, about to come to microphone three. 2 minutes, Elaine.
Thank you. Thank you very much. My name's Elaine Harger. I'm an ALA member, former almost three full terms member of council. I'm so happy to be here. This was really exciting. It was just like, you know, when I was on council. I just first want to say I did submit, you know, the documentation to BARC, but there were some mix-ups, so that's why there was the confusion earlier. The reason that I brought this resolution here is because here in Seattle, on November 7th, Bill McKibben, the environmentalist, and the organization 350.org began a national tour here to start this divestment from fossil fuel company campaign. And I thought, ALA is going to be here. ALA certainly, through its endowments, probably has stock in fossil fuel companies. And so what better place than, you know, one of America's premier professional associations to be probably the first to take a step that absolutely has to be taken if we are going to be able to have children enjoy children's literature in the future and have libraries thrive. We've just seen recently from Hurricane Sandy what climate changes can do to libraries and to our communities. And we don't have any time left. Just one fact that I'd like to point out to you. On September 28th, 1955, in the New York Times, there was a little article about a scientist working for General Electric who described his research showing that the increased levels of carbon dioxide were probably what was resulting in what had been observed in glacial melting and fish being found.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but your time is up.
Okay.
But I do thank you for stepping to the microphone. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Maybe I'll show up in Chicago.
ALA Councilor Al Kagan, please go to the microphone and read only the resolved clause of ALA Council Document Number 36, the resolution reaffirming ALA support for whistleblowers.
Resolved that the American Library Association, ALA, 1, commends the signing into law of the Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act of 2012 and the extension of similar whistleblowing protections in the 2013 National Defense Authorization Act. 2, commends Bradley Manning, John Kiriakou, and other whistleblowers acting at great personal risk to ensure that the government can be held accountable by the public. And I would like to speak to it.
Please proceed.
Thank you. I'm going to address most of my remarks to the question of Bradley Manning, because I think at the council forums we saw a general agreement that the principle is generally upheld by councilors. So I want to speak a little bit about Bradley Manning. This is a timely resolution because pretrial hearings for Manning will be held in February and May, and the trial is scheduled for June 3rd. That's before our next council meeting. The Obama administration has prosecuted more whistleblowers under the Espionage Act than all other combined administrations since that act was passed. So this is a growing problem. And of course, ALA is on record. There are many policies that we cited in the resolution, whereas, so you can see the ALA policies and the recent resolutions we have passed that relate to this matter. When Daniel Ellsberg was here a couple of years ago, Daniel Ellsberg said, "I was Bradley Manning." And we supported Daniel Ellsberg at that time. The Freedom to Read Foundation actually gave him funds to help him win his case. What are the motives of Bradley Manning? Well, I heard the word treason last night. This is actually an absurd charge. Reporters from various newspapers, including the Washington Post, New York Times, Huffington Post, have all called for the dropping of any charges against him that are deemed aiding the enemy. We know that he had access to classified information, and was appalled to read what he was reading and thought that information should be available to the American public. And that's why he did what he did. He did not release any top secret information, although he had access to it. I see that my time is running out. I want to tell you that he has been in unlawful pretrial punishment, according to the judge, in jail over almost 1,000 days, in solitary confinement for 11 months, in a 6x8 cell, 23 hours a day. The UN Special Rapporteur on Torture has called his treatment, quote, cruel, inhuman, degrading, and this is torture, according to the UN. And I see my time is up, but I hope others will fill in what I haven't been able to say yet.
Thank you. Microphone 5.
Eric Cease, Counselor at Large, and also Chair-Elect of the Intellectual Freedom Roundtable. We took up this measure here at the conference and had significant problems with the second resolved, specifically the word commends. There was discussion that, in fact, we weren't convinced that Bradley Manning, in fact, falls under the label of whistleblower. We were very, we didn't want to support this with this sort of language in it, and so IFRT chose not to respond positively.
Thank you. Microphone 5.
Jim Kuhn, Counselor at Large, and one of those who worked on this resolution. One of the reasons it's so long is because, in fact, we are on record for many, many years supporting principles that are at issue here. I think it's extremely important that we do commend this administration for their efforts in strengthening the protections that are extended to whistleblowers, while at the same time recognizing that it's not all clover and sunshine moving forward for those who engage in this sort of activity in order to hold the government accountable for waste, fraud, and abuse, sometimes for criminal activities. The signing into law is commendable, but it's the whistleblowers that we need to be encouraging, as we have done in the past with specific whistleblowers. We're on record as supporting legislation. We're also on record as supporting whistleblowers. Both of those things are important. Having been on record for supporting principles such as we do support and are on record as supporting doesn't mean a whole lot if when specific individuals at great personal risk have stepped forward to let the public know what their government has been doing in our name. And so I think it's appropriate here that this resolution both says thanks to the administration and thanks to the whistleblowers. Because moving forward, as you'll see in one of the whereases about a signing statement, whereas number 12, everything isn't fixed here yet. There are going to be future whistleblowers who face the same sort of problems that individuals like those named in this resolution are currently facing. The chilling effect that the use of the Espionage Act has on investigative journalism and on those who seek to expose wrongdoing is clear in my view. The chilling effect on future whistleblowers of the signing statement is clear in my view. The responsibility before us is to both stand by our principles.
And you can see that you're out of time, so
thank you very
proceed
much.
Proceed to thank you. Thank you. Microphone 6.
Zora Sampson, Counselor at Large. I certainly
listened last night to a lot of things people had to say. I'm certainly in support of military. My father served in both theaters of the World War I, Europe and the Pacific. I've never been to a powwow as an enrolled Choctaw where we didn't honor every veteran. But my heart tells me that this is one of those times when we have to do what's difficult and say, like I heard last night, you can't just say, I support whistleblowers, but not this one, and not this one, and not this one. And I've looked at this, and I believe that this is a worthy motion. I believe that Bradley Manning really did feel like sometimes soldiers have to stand up and say, wait, something's wrong. And if your heart tells you that you want to support someone bringing forward information and letting us know things, I think you have to support this. And I commend that you read, especially the third, whereas it's very compelling. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone six.
Mike Marlin, Counselor at Large. I appreciate what everyone said on behalf and in support of this motion. And I've heard arguments that because Bradley Manning was insubordinate, therefore he doesn't qualify as a whistleblower, but I think all the other whistleblowers that ALA have commended have been insubordinate as well. I mean, that's what whistleblowing is. When your conscience tells you, you have to bring information forward. And I don't think we want to go on record, or I should say not go on record, which is what would happen if this motion failed, with supporting resistance to information suppression. And finally, Robert Gates, the former Secretary of Defense, did indicate that the information that Bradley Manning allegedly leaked was simply embarrassing, but did not have any national security jeopardy consequences. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone seven.
Peter Hepburn, GLBTRT counselor. I apologize, I was not there last night, so this might have come up, but I'm not clear why a resolution in support of whistleblowers and commending this law being signed into passage needs to name specific people. Isn't it simply sufficient to commend whistleblowers in general? This seems to me an attempt to get through a resolution that has come before council in different forms before instead of what it purports to be.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Larry Romans, counselor at large. I have an amendment to the motion, and I have a seconder. Can the amendment be put up? And that is to remove whereases 12 through 18 and resolve clause number 2.
So we have the amendment to remove whereas clauses number 12 through number 18, the whereas clause, clauses 12 through 18, and the resolve clause number 2. And I just want at this point to remind anyone who is not speaking but is near a mic to step back just so we can be clear. And you have a seconder?
Yes. And I'd like to speak to the amendment.
That's where I was going next. Go ahead.
I have mixed feelings about Bradley Manning. I think that information is overclassified, but I also don't think that you can just release 250,000 documents without there being bad consequences for national security. I certainly support whistleblower acts, but I'm very uncomfortable having the association on behalf of all of its members make a stand about Bradley Manning, because I don't think the members are of one voice about that, and that's why I'm introducing this amendment.
And I just want to be sure right now that those of you who are at microphones are speaking to the amendment. Okay. So microphone six.
Jane Glasby, Councillor at Large, and I was the seconder of the original motion, and I want to speak against the amendment. And the reason for that is because ALA is already on record as being in support of whistleblowing as a principle, and the motion, if you take out the specific people, will just reiterate that. And not add much to what we've already seen. I think that if you're going to have a belief in a principle, that you can't then pull the rug out from under the feet of the people who actually are carrying out that principle. And that what the two people mentioned in the motion did was, I think, highly principled, and is about government transparency and access to government information. It's about reporters have complained that they can't, that there's a chilling effect, that they can't get sources, and there is definitely overclassification of materials, and the and without this kind of release on principle. And I think that what Bradley Manning in particular was appalled that what the government was doing. He took an oath to the Constitution, and the Constitution is about the responsibility, partly about the responsibility of government to the people, and government transparency is part of that. And so I think that it's really important that we support the people who are the whistleblowers, and not just talk about the principle, because I think we've already done that.
Thank you. Microphone two.
Elizabeth Riddler, Councillor at Large. I think we have to remember what happened at Council Forum last night. Once this resolution reaches Council, it is Council's document. And the discussion at Forum was strongly, by many, many, many councillors, in favor of exactly what this amendment suggests, which is, the principle is important, but we don't want it attached to particular names. I also wish to remind the body that the particular names were part of a resolution at last council, and so this is bringing back an old subject formerly rejected. I rise in support of this motion because it is exactly what the consensus coming out of Council Forum was in terms of the direction we'd like to see this resolution go.
Thank you. Microphone six.
Al Kagan, third councillor. I'm opposed to this amendment, and I want to respond specifically to what Larry just said. So Bradley Manning did not release all those documents to the public. He released them to WikiLeaks, and which WikiLeaks had a vetting process, and then WikiLeaks released those documents to various newspapers around the world, and each newspaper had a vetting process. So that's I just want to put that on the record. Now, what is it? What are some of the things that we learned from Bradley Manning? Well, we learned that the official tally of civilian deaths in Iraq and Afghanistan actually does exist, although we were told it did not. We were shown how innocent civilians were killed during those wars. We have found that it was official U.S. policy to ignore torture in Iraq. We found that U.S. civilian contractors were complicit in child trafficking activities in Afghanistan. We found that the U.S. was aiding the Tunisian dictator before he was overthrown. We found that Egyptian torturers have received training by the FBI in Quantico, Virginia. And we found, for example, that the State Department stole the DNA of the UN Secretary General. Those are just a few of the things There are all kinds of things that come out in the news all the time because of these documents. Now, as a couple of people have said before, we have passed resolutions on whistleblowing. We put them all in the document. I think it would be pointless to pass another document without the names of the specific heroic people that are doing what they do and putting their lives in jeopardy. It's likely that Bradley Manning will go to jail for the rest of his life unless there is a movement to do something about his case. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone 5. Microphone 2.
May I ask a question about the amendment, a point of information? Hattie Dudley, Arkansas chapter counselor. If we do amend it to remove those clauses and delete that second resolve, will we change the title of that resolution to remove those individuals' names?
Yes, but it will be a housekeeping matter.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Microphone 5.
Eric Cease, counselor at large. I was going to say much the same thing, but I, not talking from my organizational thing, but from personally, I think this amendment weakens the resolution to the point where it's really not that strong of a resolution that we can have. I don't think it presents a good one to go forth. I will probably vote against the amendment, but I will also vote against the original resolution should this amendment fail.
Thank you. Microphone 5.
Lauren Comito, counselor at large. I'm sort of for the, what the heck do you call them now? I'm figuring it out. Changing the resolution. I think Bradley Manning's broad release of many documents is different from John Kiriakou's, stepping back a little bit, targeted release of documents related to a specific issue that is truly horrendous. And I think that maybe removing Bradley Manning from the second resolve clause and leaving John Kiriakou in could be a compromise that would mean that we could go forward with the resolution and it would mean something, but that most of the membership could stand behind it.
Thank you. Microphone 3.
John DeSantis, counselor at large. I'm also speaking against this amendment for the reasons that other counselors, such as Councillor Kagan, have pointed out, that it does indeed weaken the entire resolution. I think that Bradley Manning's name is a recognizable one. This is an opportunity for counsel to take a stand and do the right thing. Bradley Manning is no more a criminal than anyone else in this country who has stood up for their beliefs by committing acts of civil disobedience.
Thank you. Microphone 5.
Carla Land, counselor at large. I just did a quick Google search, excuse me, nervous, on John Kiriakou. I have been following his trial and everything. According to CBS News, a federal judge rejected arguments that John Kiriakou was acting as a whistleblower on the agency's use of torture when he leaked a covert officer's name to a reporter. So if the federal judges aren't saying he's a whistleblower, I really don't think we have any right to keep him in here as a whistleblower either.
Thank you. Seeing no further discussion, we'll proceed to the vote on the amendment. Those in favor, raise one of your hands. Thank you. Those opposed, raise one of your hands. I think we're going to have to take a standing vote. And are those who will, I just want to give a moment for those who are going to count for us to get into position. Are you ready? Okay. Those in favor of the amendment, please stand. Thank you. Those opposed, now please stand. Thank you. The amendment is adopted by 75-61. 75 voting in favor, 61 opposed. So we now move to the amended resolution. Oh, mark your ballot. Thank you. Council document number 36, where we're deleting the whereas clauses 12 to 18 and the second resolve clause. If you'd go back so that everyone can mark their ballot, we just want to slow down a little bit. Mark your ballot, council document number 36, delete whereas 12 to 18 and resolve 2. and the title will be changed to reflect this. Are you ready to return to the original motion as amended? Is there discussion on the original motion as amended? Microphone 7.
Jennifer Bocher, RUSA counselor. I agree with Jane by saying, by taking out these names, which I don't believe should have been in there, that what we're voting on now is just affirmation of what we already believe about something that already has happened. So it kind of waters down the resolution to, you know, there's a lot of things that the Congress has done that I agree with, but should, or that President Obama has signed, but should we be approving all of those in retrospect instead of being an advisory forward-looking committee? So therefore, I'm not going to support this.
Thank you. Microphone 5.
Jim Kuhn, counselor at large. Forgive me, this is my first meeting at a microphone. It's not my first time at a microphone, but it's a first meeting at a microphone. And I'd like to make a motion. I don't have a seconder yet, but I'd like to move that this resolution as amended be forwarded to the Intellectual Freedom Committee to report back at annual on the current status of whistleblower protections, including the signing statement, which has now been struck, and also how ALA policies, in fact, relate to continued support for whistleblowers in a world where there now is legislation.
So we now have before us a motion.
I need to write that down, right?
Yes, we have before us a motion to refer to the intellectual freedom, and there you have a second.
Mary Mallory, counselor at large, I second it.
Thank you. So now the discussion is focused on this motion, and those of you who are speaking to this motion, to refer to IFC. There's a request to have it on the screen. Point of information, microphone 5.
Valerie Feinman speaking for herself, not for the small round tables. I don't understand. This is my whole first session or set of sessions for council. We just removed the reason for having this whole CD 36. We said, yes, we need to do A because B, the names. We already have A in our books, in our charters, in our minds. Why then, if we reject B, do we have to talk about A at all?
Okay, thank you. Microphone 2.
Pam Klipsch, Missouri Chapter Counselor. I don't think that it is useless to commend Congress and the President for proceeding to enhance protections for whistleblowers. I do think that if we refer this to the IFC, hopefully at annual we will have a resolution that has been strengthened to make it clear that we are commending them for this because we have a long-standing interest in this situation, in this topic, and we are watching them to see how this is going to be actually implemented and what the results will be. So I don't think that's a bad idea at all. I would rather do that than send it in its current state, because it does not, in its current state, make as strong an impact as I think it could once it's been reworked properly.
Thank you. Microphone 7.
Aaron Dobbs, Counselor at Large. I'd like to thank for the ALA resolution e-form at the back of the packet. I note that it was referred to COL on 128.13. It didn't come out of COL, which is fine. We have a motion to refer this to IFC. I'd like to casually ask that we ask COL to also work with IFC on that, to get it all worked in together. I don't really want to modify the motion because, oh my God, another vote. But
so we accept this in the discussion as a suggestion.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Microphone 7.
Oh,
are you speaking to the motion?
I need a clarification because I think we still.
Please identify yourself.
Sorry, I'm Sue Sheriff. I'm the Alaska chapter counselor, and I need a clarification because we want to commend the President and Congress for passing a whistleblower act, which I do agree with, but under this whistleblower act, neither one of the individuals we're talking about has been recognized as a whistleblower. In fact, they've been told that they can't be identified as whistleblower. So is the act that we're commending really that much of an improvement if these two gentlemen cannot be recognized as a whistleblower under it? So I'd like to, I guess you might be able to answer that.
So just a reminder to everyone, the discussion now is on the amendment to refer it as amended to IFC and now COL.
And I guess perhaps IFC or COL could also clarify that because I have a point of confusion there.
Thank you. Microphone 6.
Al Kagan, CERT Counselor. I'm in support of the motion to refer, and I'll tell you why. Whistleblowing is becoming harder and harder in the United States under the current administration. More whistleblowers have been charged under the Obama administration than all previous administrations under the Espionage Act. This is a problem that is getting worse. Freedom of expression is getting harder. People are getting into big trouble for doing what they morally think they should do. We need to keep this on our agenda. We need to keep following what's going on. And the IFC is a very good place for us to keep following it. I also wanted to mention, if you look at whereas number 12 that was just taken out, it tells you that even though Obama signed the bill, he issued a statement when he signed it saying that he could ignore parts of it if he thought he should. So our president, although signing, is not 100% behind what he signed. We have serious problems to address, and I hope the IFC can address them.
Thank you. Microphone 5.
Paula Brumhiger, Counselor at Large. Thank you to the movers of the original motion and all the amendments. What I'm about to say in no way devalues the discussion, but I am compelled to once again ask where point number 4 is from council documents that we discussed yesterday, which were put into effect in 2011, which ask for, and I think perhaps require, that there is a paragraph associated with the resolutions about how it relates to the strategic plan and our core values. I bring that up again now because I think it's important to realize, had that been associated, perhaps it would have been a little bit more clear that IFC and COL should have been involved in this resolution earlier. So again, I think this is a fine discussion, but should we be expecting this kind of documentation along with resolutions going forward? And shouldn't that be in place now? Thank you.
Noted. Thank you. Microphone 5.
Jim Kuhn, Counselor at Large. I would like to speak to the point that was just raised and just indicate that a revision of the ALA Resolution E form is probably in order because, in fact, there is no request for such a statement in the supporting documentation that is requested to come along with a resolution which is submitted as a resolution committee. So maybe we need a 6C or something, but maybe that's a housekeeping question. Thank you.
So are you ready to vote? The motion before you is to refer Council Document Number 36 as amended to the Intellectual Freedom Committee and the Committee on Legislation for report at annual 2013. Those in favor, please raise one of your hands. Thank you. Those opposed, also please raise one of your hands. It's carried. Thank you. The motion has passed. And mark your ballot. Refer CD number 36 as amended to IFC and COL. I now call upon Keith Michael Fields for his final announcements. Keith.
Thank you. The following petitions have been received for Counselor at Large. Christina Dominguez Ramirez, Library Community Services Manager at the Richmond Public Library, Broad Rock Library in Richmond, Virginia. Maria Tessil Hudson Carpenter, Director of Libraries at the Somerville Public Library in Somerville, Massachusetts. Carla M. Land, Children's Services Department Head at the Las Vegas Clark County Library District, Summerline Library in Las Vegas, Nevada. Ismail Abdullahi, Associate Professor at North Carolina Central University School of Library and Information Sciences in Durham, North Carolina. And that's it. And then last but not least, the final attendance figures. Attendance for this conference was registrants, 5,519 advanced, 1,175 on-site registrants for a grand total of 6,694. And again, that's about 500 more than Dallas and about 500 less than San Diego. And 4,037 exhibitors for a grand total of 10,731, which is, yep, oh, pardon me. And again, which is brings the total to about 800 above Dallas and about 400 below San Diego.
Microphone four.
Hi, yes, Loida Garcia Febo, Councilor at Large, also Chair of ALA Committee of Membership Meetings. I would like to announce that ALA will have its virtual membership meeting on June 6th. From 3 to 4:30 Central Time, and there will be more announcements and detailed information, but since you're here, please mark your calendars, June 6th from 3 to 4:30 Central Time.
Thank you.
Point of
person. Microphone seven.
Okay. Since we're all leaving early, let's reduce our footprint and take the train that goes from Westlake directly to the airport. It's only $2.75 for the ride, and it's less than an hour.
Thank you. Keith?
As Loida has announced, the virtual membership meeting is June 6th, and as a point of personal privilege, that's my birthday. So I hope you'll all join me for a giant virtual birthday cake. I do have one last announcement. In the interest of please placing your empty portfolio in the storage boxes at the documents pickup tables, and then we will retain them for your use at the 2013 annual conference. Thank you.
I'm going to call upon microphone seven, but I just want to be sure everyone has made sure their name is on your ballot before you pass them in. You're ahead of us. Microphone seven.
Also a point of privilege. This is Alexia Hudson Ward, ALA Executive Board and Pennsylvania Chapter Counselor. When I came on to council, I was engaged. I've since gotten married, and so many of you all have been just so kind. You have sent gifts, cards, and emails, and my husband and I thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Thank you. So we've concluded our agenda. Before I adjourn, I want to invite members of the executive board to meet up here so that we can identify the time when we're going to start our meeting. And I thank all of you for great work and support, and I declare the meeting adjourned. See you in Chicago.